So we're going to talk about the Bills, right?
Talk about the Bills. There's some interesting things there. You know, the Rob Johnson thing, I know that we want to talk about, and the Bills thing. Probably just how you got fired there too with, you know, Ronnie Jones and that whole thing. And then if you're willing to talk about the Music City Miracle.
I'm Wade Phillips.
And I'm Wes Phillips. We're past and present coaches here to bring you an insider's perspective on the teams, the people, and the personalities that we've encountered over time. So we've spoken a lot about, you know, each of our careers, you know, and kind of brushed through the places that we've gone, but we thought we would kind of dig in on some individual teams here that you've been with in your career, some of the stories, some of the things that occurred this week, focusing on your time in Buffalo with the Bills. You know, you went to Denver, you were let go in Denver after the 94 season and then hired as defensive coordinator by Marv Levy. Did you know Marv prior to him hiring you? How did that work out?
Yeah, I didn't know Marv, but I didn't know John Butler either, but actually John Butler, the GM, was the guy that hired me. I mean, Marv hired me, but he was the driving force in it because we had played the Buffalo Bills at Denver and went up to Buffalo in a playoff game, and they beat us 10-7 in the playoff game. They were running the K-gun offense. They went to one of the Super Bowl teams. They lost in the Super Bowl, but they still scored a whole bunch of points, even in the Super Bowl, I believe, and moved the ball up and down the field. They were the number one offense in the league, and we really shut them down. In fact, we got beat 10-7, but their only touchdown was John Elway threw a middle screen. They intercepted it for a touchdown, and we missed three field goals in that game. Actually, John Elway got hurt towards the end of the game, and Gary Kubiak came in at quarterback and almost brought us down the field in the fourth quarter. But anyway, we did so well in that game. We completely shut them down. They did a lot with Thurman Thomas going in motion, putting him in as a receiver. And every time they did that, we blitzed the safety on them, and that messed up their whole offense for some reason. And then we stopped the running game. Thurman Thomas obviously was a great player. We stopped him. We stopped their passing game. I think they barely had over 200 yards in the game, and, you know, they were averaging 400 a game. So John Butler was impressed with that. And so when they let the defensive coordinator go there and I was let go at Denver, he gave me a call. In fact, he gave me the call and said, would you like to come to Buffalo? He said, we want to hire you at Buffalo right now. And there wasn't any interview. There wasn't any, you know, go there and talk about it or talk with me. I didn't talk with Marv Levy at all, really. I'm pretty sure John Butler did it.
And when you went to Buffalo, this is after they had their four-year run of four straight Super Bowls, four straight Super Bowl losses. You're with Marv Levy. Marv was known as being very much a player's coach, Camp Marv in training camp. And I know he didn't care, you know, about preseason record. And in fact, they were 0-4 in those four straight Super Bowl years. They were 0-4 in the preseason. Was that approach unique to you at the time, or was it something that was reminiscent of, you know, coaching with your dad, how Bum treated the players?
Yeah, it was similar to what my dad did training camp, and yeah, protecting the players. In fact, yeah, that was really similar, but it was unique to the rest of the league because most of the teams didn't do that. They practiced full hard practices, especially when I was with my dad in training camp. You know, they would have double days and full pads and things like that. You know, my dad never did that. Well, Marv was pretty much the same way. He wanted to keep his players healthy, which seems to be the way things are going now. I mean, he didn't want to lose them in preseason. He certainly didn't want to lose them in training camp. And the first thing I noticed in the first day of training camp, some of the players were bringing their golf clubs. So I knew right then, I thought, well, gosh, you know, they're going to have time to play golf. Well, they did. The first practice, I'll never forget this. We finished practice, morning practice. Normally you go to lunch right after morning practice. Well, when we got through the morning practice, it was an hour, at least an hour before the lunchroom was going to open. There was a lot of time. And even after practice, like I said, players would go out and play golf, play nine holes anyway, and then come back to the night meetings. And it obviously worked. And Marv was a good communicator with the players. He cared about them and he cared about their health. That all worked together.
Do you ever find that Sometimes I feel we've probably both been in some great cultures, coaching in the league or other places where maybe the culture isn't quite as good. You know, I kind of sometimes wish that some of the rookies or some of the players that only played have only played at this one place. So, you know, you have someone who's only played for Marv Levy. They think that maybe that's how everywhere is, and they don't understand, you know. And sometimes I try to tell the guys who've been other places, hey, you know, let these guys know that it's not like this everywhere. Be appreciative of the fact that coach is looking out for you, is actually thinking about that. I mean, you could be at a place where you're having 3-hour practices and 2-a-days, and, you know, they've knocked some of those rules have changed a little bit since then, but, you know, certainly there's better places, you know, that are more player friendly. And, you know, a lot of times I think they don't necessarily appreciate it if they haven't been elsewhere.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the first thing is it's too soft, that you're making your team soft if you're looking out for the players. Can kind of go both ways. But yeah, like you say, I think the players that have been different places realize that coaches are trying to take care of them as far as getting them to the season, not having them injured, and still working them hard. You still work hard. You know, that's the first thing that football players learn, that you have to work hard to be successful.
Well, yeah, I think mistakenly people think, quote unquote, players coach, and it just means that the players do whatever they want. I mean, regardless of the situation you're in, you have to have some sort of structure, some sort of discipline, you know, for everything to function from day to day, certainly. But Marv ends up retiring. Your defensive coordinator there for 3 years, and then Marv retires. Was that expected? Did you expect that, or was that out of the blue?
No, it came out of the blue. Marv, you know, I think the second year there, third year, somewhere in there, somebody figured out Marv was older than he said he was, you know, because he had been the head coach of Kansas City at one time, and he had actually changed. I think he had said he was younger than he actually was in the press guide for a while, and they caught it. So he was 71, I think, when he retired. But
really, really old.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what I hear. But still real vibrant. And, no, it was surprising. We didn't know, you know, he was going to retire. I think he and Ralph Wilson, I don't know what went on with that conversation. I have an inkling, and I probably shouldn't speculate, but I think, what happened was Marv said, well, I need to retire if we don't do better. And maybe Ralph took it as, okay, you're retired. You can retire. And only Marv could tell us that story.
Yeah, well, Marv, certainly Hall of Fame coach, and like we said, kind of thought out of the box, at least for that time. And I think, like you said, everyone's kind of moving in the direction that he was moving towards 30 years ago. You know, no preseason, not playing starters in preseason. And really, when it's all said and done, it really is, working with other teams is a better environment than playing in preseason. When you talk about, you can control the situations, you can control the reps, you can say, hey, we're going to get our starters X amount of third down snaps. You might play your starters in one game in the preseason for two series, they get one third down, whatever it might be. And, you know, just to be able to do it in a controlled environment seems to be kind of what everyone's getting to now.
Yeah, we were way back at Oklahoma State when I was in Oklahoma State. We, of course, Oklahoma was great at that time, and we were pretty good. But we looked over at Oklahoma, and Barry Switzer in spring training wasn't playing. His great players weren't practicing. And we were practicing our great players, and I remember one of them got hurt, you know, in spring training and didn't get to play next year. And all Oklahoma players were playing, and that's when I thought, well, maybe spring training isn't as important as we think it is. And I think it's the same thing with that. I think Marv knew preseason wasn't as important as, or at least they thought of it before, that you had to play your starters all the time.
And then when he is announcing his retirement, at that point, were you thinking, you know, you'd had some success there on defense for 3 years there. Are you thinking at this point, hey, I want this job, or I'm going to get this job? How did that process go about?
Again, I think that was John Butler. John Butler told me when Marv, he said, I want you as a coach. And I said, well, I appreciate that, John. And then he called me one day and said, Wade, Ralph Wilson's fixing to call you and offer you the job. I said, oh, okay. And so, and sure enough, Ralph Wilson called me and I turned it down.
Really? You
know? Yeah. Well, he called me. Well, it went back to Denver. When I got the Denver job, when I first got the Denver head coaching job, they didn't know who was going to get it. And I went, yes, you know, and I got the job. Mm-hmm. And then I walked in and they said, here's your contract, sign it. I didn't even know what I was making. Well, I knew what I was making, but I'll never forget. I was doing a radio show, like two or three radio shows, you know, 3 days a week, and a TV show. And I knew coaches were making good money on that stuff. So I asked our general manager, you know, how much do I get on this radio show and this TV stuff? And he said, oh, no, no, that was in your contract. He said, your next contract, if you want to negotiate for that, well, we can do that. But no, that's all a part of your contract that you signed. Going back to Ralph Wilson, he called me and he said, you know, Wade, I want you to be my coach. And I said, okay, great. He said, you know, I'll pay you a certain number, you know. And I said, no, I can't do that, Mr. Wilson. And he said, what? And I said, well, I had heard that, I think it was pretty much true, but they had hired a coach for the Colts from college, and what they were paying him. You know, I didn't have an agent or anything. I did when I was defensive coordinator, but I should have when I got to be a head coach, but I didn't have an agent. But anyway, I said, they're paying that guy more than what you just offered me. I said, he's been in college. And he said, well, what would it take? You know, and I said, such and such. I threw out a number. And then he said, okay, 3 years at that same number. Okay. Because I thought it was decent, but I probably would have been better off with an agent anyway. But actually, I mean, we can go into that story too, but I did have an agent as a coordinator, and it helped us buy a new house there in Buffalo. I don't know if you want to hear that one.
Sure. Your agent helped you get a new house, your agent for football?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have an agent when I signed there. And somebody said you ought to get an agent. They had a friend, and he was out of Atlanta. He was an agent. So my next contract, I was going to get an agent to do my contract. Well, I had a 2-year contract when I went there. After the second year, we did, you know, the first year we went in the playoffs. We beat Miami in the playoffs. I mean, we had a great year. After 2 years, I had to sign a new contract. Well, I decided to get an agent. I got this agent. So he's talking to him. Well, I don't know if he started it or somebody knew it, but somehow they thought Miami was trying to get me. Mm. Now your bargaining position is a lot better. I don't know if the agent told him that or not. And I don't know if it's true or not, but anyway, they were afraid that Miami in the same division, who we had just beaten several times in the 2 years, they thought they wanted me. The agent calls me and he says, okay, Wade, he said, you can have anything you want. He said, what do you want? And I said, well, we're renting a house and we want to buy a house here in Buffalo. And you moved us from, you know, they move you from Denver, they pay the moving. Well, I wanted to be able to move my furniture from the rent house to the new house that we were buying. I said, I'd like to be moved without paying for it. And I'd like to be the highest paid defensive coordinator in the league. He called me the next day and said, okay, you got it. So that's when we moved houses. That's when we moved to that other house in Buffalo. We'd already bought the house, but I mean, that's why we moved, was the bills paid for it.
Well, and anyone who knows my mom, aka your wife, knows that she's collected quite a bit of stuff over time. So that was not a cheap move, I'm sure.
No, it wasn't. You're right.
but kind of getting back to Ralph Wilson, just in general, Ralph was a little different as far as owners, some owners, I would say. I do remember, I think he drove a Ford Taurus around to the Ralph Wilson Stadium, you know, the stadium with his name on it. He's got a franchise, just kind of different there, quirky as far as, you know, he wasn't this lavish guy with the yachts and the planes and all that, was he?
No, he wasn't. He lived in Detroit. He would fly in for the games, but he flew commercial for the ball games in Buffalo. He didn't go to many of the away games. I can't remember hardly any that he went to, really, you know, unless we were playing in Detroit. I don't think he was I don't know. I mean, he wasn't cheap with the players. I mean, I think he paid the players pretty well, and as far as that was concerned. But the away games, actually, he would go into he would go to Buffalo if the game wasn't being shown in Detroit, because they didn't have, you know, the DirecTV all 16 games or whatever on TV. So to watch TV, he had a little apartment he had that his little niece lived in. He would fly to Buffalo and watch the game from Buffalo on her TV and that little condo she had.
Wait. So if he's not getting the game locally in Detroit, the owner of the team, he's flying to Buffalo and watching the game in an apartment in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's the way it was. Yeah.
Wow.
And he was in constant communication with John Butler. I mean, he called him, what I'm saying, the constant, every day. He talked to him every day because I was in there in John's office a lot of times when he was talking, and John would put him on speaker, although Mr. Wilson didn't know he was on speaker, but just so I could hear what's going on. He was obviously worried about his team. Now, he did always say, and I think he was right, you know, he always said, you know, everybody says I make all this money off this team. He said, but that's only if I sell it, because he bought it for $25,000. He was in mm-hmm. the AFL, he bought a team, and now it's worth multi-million. And he said, yeah, he said, everybody says that. But he said, I only get that if I sell the team. And he said, I'm never going to sell the team. He had a point there, and I do think they were making money, but he was right. I mean, they sold the team after he passed away. He didn't realize that money, but he had money. I mean, he was living in Detroit in a high dollar area that, I mean, he wasn't poor or anything, but
sure.
But he didn't have that money from what the franchise was worth.
Sure. And so, you know, you start off your first year as a head coach. Okay, this is post Jim Kelly, and you guys need a quarterback. You end up signing Rob Johnson to be the starting quarterback, right? I mean, you assumed that he was going to be the starter.
We traded for Rob Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacksonville had him. He played a few games there and played well. And our scouts and John Butler. John Butler was really the guy. I mean, I really leaned on him for evaluations for players in the draft, too. Although we were on equal basis, I will say this. Ralph Wilson made me vice president of football operations, in which he told me, he said, that way, he said, you don't have to go through John Butler to talk to me. So John and I were kind of on equal level. And that way, in the draft, we both gave our opinion. John was great to work with. And we both gave our opinion, and we really didn't have an argument of who we were going to take in the draft and so forth, because, you know, he had a lot of information, and I depended on him some, and he depended on me on what type player we wanted. So we were kind of equal in that area.
Yeah, I remember that trade. Johnson had this one great game in relief of Mark Brunell. Yeah, he had the highest completion percentage ever in a quarterback's debut. I think he ran for a good amount of yards. He threw for a bunch of yards. And you guys end up giving him a $25 million contract, which at the time was a lot of money, especially for a guy who hadn't started a lot. I mean, he was certainly a guy you guys were thinking was going to be the guy, but around the same time, you end up signing, you know, a 36-year-old guy from the Canadian League, hadn't been in the NFL in probably about a decade. And of course, that was Doug Flutie. He's been in Canada for 8-9 years at the time. And, you know, how did that, was that John Butler? Was that you? I mean, how does he get back into the NFL?
Yeah, we signed Rob Johnson and, I mean, traded for him. And so we were going to get him. And A.J. Smith, who was he was assistant general manager. He actually went to Canada quite a bit. I'm not sure why, but he was the guy that wanted Flutie. Now, the first thing with me was when I went in as head coach and Jim Kelly was gone, I knew the first thing you needed was a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, so I wasn't against giving up a number one for a quarterback we thought could play, probably not being able to get one in the draft. That's what we thought in the first round, you know, that was good enough. And then AJ just kept pushing it and say, hey, we need another quarterback. We didn't have any quarterbacks, really, without Kelly. And our backup guy that played for Kelly wasn't a great player, so we didn't have him either. AJ just pushed and said, yeah, we need to get him. He can still play. And, you know, although he'd never played well in the NFL, but he played great in Canada. So anyway, we ended up signing him.
Yeah, it, you know, ended up being kind of a great swan song, you know, for him, for his career. You guys started off the year in 98 with Rob as the guy, but then he was kind of plagued by injuries throughout his career, I think. And Doug ended up playing 13 games. You guys are 10-6.
Yeah, we started 0-3. There are very few teams that have ever made the playoffs starting 0-3. I thought I was going to have a real short career there. Now, I think Bruce Smith was out first of the season. We had a couple other guys out, whatever, and we played some tough teams. I don't know. But anyway, we lost the first three, and there was a little heat coming then, but we made the playoffs. And Doug, I'll never forget the first game he played in. We're playing in the game, and one of his first plays, we're backed up. And he drops back to pass, and he starts running with it. So he's running down the middle of the field, okay? And I'm standing on the sideline, obviously. And all of a sudden, he looks over, and he throws the ball, looked like right at me. He throws the ball, laterals the ball. Now, you can't pass it. You're past the line of scrimmage. But he throws it backwards, but it's coming right at me. And Thurman Thomas runs right in front of me and catches it. It was just a lateral, but it was about a 25-yard lateral, you know. He was throwing it from the middle of the field, and the guy caught it on the sideline. And, I mean, I just almost fell out. I went, oh, my gosh, how did he see that, number one? How did you do that? Well, you know, who could do something like that? And it was Doug Flutie.
Well, he became such a hero in Buffalo, really just a phenomenon.
We won two games that I can think of. We won two games on the last play of the game. When we were on the other team's like 2-yard line or down on the goal line, and we had a play, we had a double call, and we ran off tackle if it was there, or he bootlegged it with a crack back and a tackle pull, mm-hmm. whatever he saw, if he saw one or the other was there. Most of the time it was the crack back, him rolling out away from where he was going to hand the ball. And I think both those times he ran that play for a touchdown on the last play of the game.
I think I remember that play. Yeah, I've got a good image of him running to the front pylon there. Yeah, he seemed to be like the perfect fit for Buffalo, you know, kind of the underdog type guy. They started the Flutie Flakes there, and a lot of that went to charity for his son. But it was like such a phenomenon. You guys ended up going to the wild card that year and lost to the Dolphins, Jimmy Johnson, Dan Marino's Dolphins. Really, you had first and goal from the five, I think, to tie the game. I mean, it was 24-17, ended up being the final there, and then Doug gets sacked.
We were actually down with no time left, basically. We scored a touchdown and got an onside kick and then got down there. So, I mean, we had it looked like we were out of it, and then we had a chance at the end. And, you know, they called it a fumble, and I thought it was an incomplete pass on the goal line down there too. But anyway, they called it a fumble, and, yeah, we were on the 5-yard line, and he dropped back to throw it, and the ball went forward, so I thought it was a forward pass. But somehow those things didn't happen good for us.
Well, I think we'll get to another play where there might have been some controversy, in the next year in 1999. So now Doug is the guy, right?
Right.
From the start of the season, you guys win a lot of games. You guys ended up 11-5 and once again going to the wild card, but this time going to Nashville to play the Titans. You know, the thing that I think most people remember besides the game is most people in Buffalo would remember about, you know, announcing Rob Johnson as the starter for the playoff game. I know this is not breaking news. You've mentioned this before, you know, about Mr. Wilson, but like digging into that, you know, this guy plays the whole time, right? He plays the whole season.
He didn't play the last game. We were already in the playoffs. We were playing the Colts the last game of the season at home. And so we couldn't gain anything by winning or losing. So, you know, we had Rob Johnson. We wanted to keep I felt like we're going to keep Flutie healthy because, you know, he did tend to wear down. Now he wasn't a big guy, you know, and he did a lot of running and running around with the football and so forth. So we thought it was a good idea to play Rob Johnson the last game of the season and then go into the playoffs. And Rob had a great game in that game. I don't know all the stats now. We make You've got to look him up. But he had a great game in that game. And the Colts had a pretty good team, and we beat them pretty soundly with Rob at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Your thought was that Doug is going to be, you know, playing in this wild card game. And then at what point, because you guys didn't have the bye or anything. So, I mean, you're finished the season. You're playing the next right. next Sunday. You know, at what point does this come up where Ralph Wilson or how did this come up where Rob gets announced the starter?
Well, I talk to Ralph every week after the ball game, and he always asked me how the players played and so forth. And I learned after a while, because if you said a player didn't play very good, you know, one of them didn't play, you know, the right guard didn't play very good, well, play the guy behind him, you know. I said, well, the guy behind him isn't as good. We even though he didn't do good, the guy behind him isn't as good. He said, well, I'm paying him a lot of money, you know, to play good, you know. And so, you know, it came down to money sometimes with Ralph. So, but anyway, I'm talking to him about the game. I said, Rob played, you know, really well. And he said, well, let's play him. And I said, what? And he said, well, he needs to play. He's the number one. We gave up a number one for him. He needs to play. And I said, well, Mr. Wilson, he said, you know, basically, when Ralph got an idea now, I mean, that's the way it was. And that's the way it was going to be. And looking back on it now, you know, I probably should have said different. But I'm pretty sure I would have got fired if we played Flutie and didn't win. When I got fired, there were obviously some things there that, but anyway, that's the way it happened. He told me that Monday when I talked to him, you know, when the players were off, he said, you're playing, I want him playing. And I said, okay, Mr. Wilson. So we did.
You kind of had to take the hit for all that though. And
well, you can't say that at the time, certainly.
Right. Hey, the owner told me to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't say that basically. He's gone now, and I'm not, I mean, that's what he thought. And so that there was nothing wrong. And I will say this now, we didn't lose the game because of Rob Johnson. We were actually ahead when Rob Johnson got off the field. So, you know, who knows what happened if Doug would have played or not, you know, whether we'd won or not. But I know one thing, when Rob Johnson left the field, we were ahead.
Well, yeah, he led a drive, you know, to go ahead drive at the time. I think there was 1:48 to go and drove down and end up going ahead 16-15 with the go-ahead field goal. And then of course, the game is known now as the Music City Miracle. Frank Wycheck throwing the ball to Kevin Dyson. He runs 75 yards down the sideline with no time remaining. I happened to be at that game. You know, I wasn't coaching at the time, but I was on the sideline there. And there was a really long review after the game. I mean, the crowd just kind of waiting, you know, they went crazy and now they're just waiting. Everyone's waiting. Hey, what did you see it? Did you see it? After all these years, 21 years later, I guess, was it a lateral?
Of course it was. You know, it's the Music City Mistake.
It was a lateral or was illegal forward?
It was illegal forward pass. Yeah, it wasn't it was lateral, but it was forward. And it's pretty clear. I mean, there's a line there. I mean, you can see where the guy's behind the line and a guy catches in front of the line. So I was standing on the field watching it. And I thought, because we had instant replay, that's why we had instant replay. I thought for sure they're going to bring it back. Now, there were some other things that happened as far as why it happened. But I thought for sure they were going to bring it back, but they didn't. And maybe it was close. I don't know. But I just thought there was a line there. And I was standing there watching him throw the ball, and it went forward, my opinion.
Yes. I've always thought that if they would have ruled it the other way to start, you know, if they would have thrown the flag, then.
Yeah. I think the officials were way back at the goal line for the kickoff. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't get up there in time to be able to look where I was to see whether it was a forward lateral or not. But I think that was a big part of it.
Definitely.
They couldn't see it.
And then they couldn't reverse the call because there just wasn't quite enough visual evidence. It's kind of how I look at it now.
I just think they'd have killed everybody. If the whole crowd would have killed everybody if the, if they ruled against the Titans. So.
Oh, I totally agree.
I think they were scared of the crowd.
One thing about that, like I said, I was at that game, and so I kind of was privy to some of the things that went on before that kick. So you kick it, you know, the ball hits around the 25-yard line to Wycheck. It's a bloop kick. When the special teams coordinator at the time, when he asks you, hey, you know, what do you want to do with the kickoff? What's the decision there, and how did that come about?
Well, it was only 16 seconds left. I told him, kick the ball deep. He said something about, let's bloop kick it. Let's bloop kick it. Let's bloop kick it. I said, no, let's kick it deep. And then I walked off and we ended up bloop kicking, which surprised me. And the other thing is, if you were going to bloop kick the ball, if I were going to do it, I would always bloop kick it outside the numbers where you can come in on the ball rather than in the middle of the field. If you come in on the ball, then they can lateral it outside of your container, so forth. Because we had set our kickoff coverage, we had set on our right side where they ended up throwing it back to, which was their left. We had set our outside player, our contained player. He wasn't a contained guy on the kickoffs. He went straight to the ball because he was our best guy to go into the football on the regular kickoff. So another guy further down, the inside guy was supposed to go outside. Okay. So once it was booped in the middle, the outside guy went toward the ball. The inside guy still wasn't going to go outside because it wasn't kicked very far. And they got outside of us, you know, when they illegally threw the ball.
Yeah, and you did end up looping it. And I remember that distinctly because I remember that you were asked about it in the media afterwards. You said, oh, we felt like we'd have a better chance versus a guy who wasn't a returner to cover and all that. And then, but I do remember walking up to the plane when you talked to him again. It was really the first time you'd seen him through. And I was standing right there and he was, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault. And then you asked him, hey, did you tell him to bloop it? No, I told him to bloop it. And it's something, you know, I've always respected that you never threw someone under the bus. And of course I'm doing it right now. So I, you know, I'm your son and I don't care. What got me at the time was after the season you fire him. Okay. And this is a guy that was very well respected in the league and still had a great career afterwards, but you know, everyone's calling.
Was a good coach. He was a good special team coach. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. But everyone's saying, oh, they made him the scapegoat. When in fact, I think most people would agree, knowing all the facts of the situation, that, I mean, he deserved to get fired. I mean, there's been guys, there was a guy in Detroit last season, this past year, who called his own number, did something that he didn't, you know, call it a fake without going over it with the head coach. And, you know, that's kind of what happens, right, in any profession.
Sure,
One of the last things I would like to hit, though, is once you do fire your special teams coordinator, you make somewhat controversial, I guess, or at least unconventional hire when you hire Ronnie Jones as the special teams coordinator. You know, he'd been a defensive coach throughout his career and in the NFL, been a defensive coordinator in the NFL. Looking back, do you think you subjected yourself to more scrutiny?
It was more me than him, because his background was defense and he was a really good coach. Now, like you said, he'd been with me when we were with the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, we had coached together before. You know, we had talked about loyalty. I knew he'd be loyal. I knew he'd do what I asked him to do, but he didn't have a good enough special teams background. So I put him in a position that he probably shouldn't have been in, because I was looking for someone that would be loyal and do what I said, you know, do what I asked him to do, basically. Now there was another part to that. We had to let go a lot of players that year, my last year there, because of money.
Right.
Thurman Thomas was gone.
Several
of our special teams players were gone. That helped us. But I did put Ronnie in a bad position, and our special teams weren't good that year. Now, we still went 8-8, you know, I mean, we didn't have a terrible year, but 8-8 year after being in the playoffs 2 years in a row, well, then you're fired. So that's, we know there's two kinds of coaches.
That's right. Yeah, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith, and Thurman Thomas, all kind of cap casualties that year.
Yeah, plus Mark Pike, who was our special teams captain, and several other guys that were important to that.
And just kind of, you know, wrapping up the Buffalo tenure, you mentioned you go 8-8, and what is the end like? You go 8-8, and then Ralph Wilson calls, because Ronnie Jones had a role, or at least played a part in this whole thing. Mr. Wilson ends up saying, "Hey, this guy's got to go." Is that kind of how it went down?
We met with him in Miami. He had a place in Miami, so we met with him at his condo in Miami and talked about everything. He talked about coaches and so forth. "I don't like this Jones guy, you know, that kind of thing." And I said, "Well, I took the blame, which I should have. I said, I put him in a position that it wasn't his background. It's my fault." I said, "We still got to pay him." I said, "We can use him on defense, and I'll hire another special teams coach." Mm-hmm. And we left it at that when I went back to Buffalo. And
so then I all got, good. You're looking forward to next year.
Yeah. And then I get back to Buffalo, and there's rumors, and the paper says I'm getting fired. And so I called Mr. Wilson, because I was supposed to go to the East-West game. I went to the East-West game every year to scout, starting our scouting process as coaches. And it was in San Francisco then, and, you know, I'm in Buffalo. And I said, "Mr. Wilson, I'm hearing things." I said, "Should I go ahead and go to the East-West game?" And he said, "You normally go to the East-West game?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." And he said, "Well, yeah, you should go." Now, in between this time, he fired John Butler. Before he did me, he fired John Butler, and John Butler had worked for him 20 years, at least 20 years. You know, I thought was a great general manager, but anyway, he had fired John Butler because he was mad at him because John Butler hadn't signed his contract, and he thought he was already with some other team, and he got mad at him and fired him. And I will say this, he was really mean about that. A lot of things he wasn't, but I mean, he told me, he said, I'm going to take a shower tonight and I'll never think about him again. And I said, "Mr. Wilson, he worked for you." And John Butler never took a vacation. You know, the vacation time, he worked every year for 20 years. I said, he and I told Mr. Wilson that, and I'm glad I did. I stood up for him. I said, "Hey, he worked for you 20 years, never took a vacation." I said, "You owe him that." And he said, "Ah." And so that upset me a lot, really, that he fired John Butler, you know, one thing, but that he felt that way about, you know, someone. Anyway, we go to the East-West game. Laurie goes with me, and we go to the East-West game. As soon as I get in the hotel, phone rings. And as soon as I get in my room, "Wade, Ralph Wilson." I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "I told you to fire that Jones guy." And I said, "No, sir, Mr. Wilson, you did not tell me that." I said, I went through the same thing. I said, "We're going to move him and we're going to hire another special teams coach." "No, and he said, "No, but you knew what I meant." And he said, I might get rid of some of the rest of your coaches too." And I said, "Well, if you're going to get rid of all my coaches, then you ought to get rid of me." And about then, I probably shouldn't have said that, because about then he said, "Okay, you're fired. I'm calling the PR guy right now," and hung up. And so that's how that ended. I mean, I worked hard for Ralph Wilson, and he paid me every day that I worked. So I don't have any regrets about it, any of it. And it was his prerogative to do it. I still think there was a misunderstanding there, and I couldn't get it over to him. And so that's the way it happened.
Wow. And last coach, you were the last coach to lead the Bills to the playoffs until 2017, Sean McDermott, and they didn't have a 10-win season again until 2019, 2 years ago. So, you know, those are some stories I know just from our time in Buffalo. I mean, all my friends are just diehard Buffalo guys, and some stuff there that I know they're just going to love to hear.
Well, it was eventful, that's for sure.
Well, that was great, Dad. I appreciate you sharing some of those stories, even some of the more sensitive topics there.
You bet. That's what we do. Over time.
Over time.